Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China's official PMI, above 53. Bernanke comes out and talks about gas prices. The Eco Surprise Index is starting to roll over. And our guest today, Tadas Fiskada of Abnormal Returns. All this and much more on episode number 257 for the first week of April, 2012. Well, hey, how are you? I'm just back from a trip. I had a weekend with my daughter Erica. We were at what was called the Daddy-Daughter Weekend at Kappa Kappa Gamma up in FSU, and I had an opportunity to spend some time as kind of going back some years as a college student. Not much has changed, by the way, folks, as you would imagine. There's the same partying going on the weekends like crazy, fried, greasy food, and just all sorts of fun. I got to tell you something, though. It's amazing up in Tallahassee. For under $10, you can get absolutely inebriated if you had that inclination. It's amazing how cheap things are when it comes to the alcohol in that area. And I guess that fits right well in with a college town. But we had a great time. We spent some time bonding and also had some great time at the sorority. Also spent some time looking at the various bars around town and seeing what was going on, some competitions for Margaritaville, and they just did a great job. All the friends, Alyssa, Caitlin, and Gabby, and everybody at Kappa Kappa Gamma, you guys are awesome. So I just want to put a quick shout out to you. And other than that, it was a nice weekend. It was cool up there. But there were some things that happened still in the world of business throughout the last week that I thought we'd talk about, spend some time on, and really kind of dig into some of the issues that are really, really kind of coming to the forefront right now. I guess we'll start with China, because China has been one of the, I guess, the linchpin of what has been said to be the economic recovery between the years of, I guess, 2010 through 2012. And one of the big things has been that they have been doing their best to fight inflation, slow down the property value appreciation, done a very good job with that, as we've seen over the last 6 to 8 months. And what we saw right now was a very conflicting number that came out this weekend. And that was the official, quote, official government index of the PMI, which came out at 53. Expectations were for about a 51. Now, this is a manufacturing gauge. Let's just kind of leave it as simply as that. And one of the big issues that was really haunting a lot of people was, hey, how badly is China going to slow down? If they're going to slow down, are they going to have a soft landing, a hard landing? You know, hard landing being where things just collapse terribly and the inflation is out of control and the government is tightening and just things just fall apart. Property values drop, enter into a big recessionary period, et cetera. Or are we going to have a soft landing where somehow the government orchestrates a beautifully artfully done slowing down of the economy and at the same time keeping it kind of very well balanced so that there is growth? It's very hard to do that, especially in an economy as big as theirs, with a country that is as diverse as theirs and with a country that has such a reliance on exporting throughout the world. So what happened is that we saw conflicting numbers, because we saw the official number come out at 53. I think 53.1 was the actual number, about 2 points higher than expectations. But just early in the week, we saw the private number, the HSBC number, come out, and they were at about 48. They were in a level that was deemed to be contractionary. Now, the magical number is 50 for this type of number when it comes to manufacturing numbers, whether it's here or in China. Over 50 is expansionary and under 50 is contraction. So what's the difference? Well, some people are saying, well, you look at the China and you look at the corruption and you look at the government trying to manipulate things, and sure, they're going to come out with a number that's better than expected because they're just trying to make sure that everybody's happy and keep the ball rolling. And if you look at the private number, obviously, that's much more of an efficient level and much more, you know, they're looking at things as a statistical measure, and they're not going to fluff it up or anything. I don't know. I mean, you have to look at it as it is conflicted. No question about that. Do we look at China as a place that we can't trust the official numbers? Maybe. Do we look at the private numbers as being absolute? I guess so. But at the same time, if the government numbers are not exactly efficient, I don't think the private numbers can be efficient either. So I'm not giving the benefit of the doubt to either side, but why not just split it in the middle? Let's just take the two and average them. That's probably the best way to do things, right? So we're at about, I guess, close to about 50 and a half, maybe 51. So we're still in an expansionary level when it comes to China, but albeit you have to realize that they are slowing down. The main issue when we saw their recent numbers on their imports and exports recently and their surplus deficit and their trade balance, what happened is that there was definitely a slowdown. In particular, that slowdown happened due to the fact that Europe has been slowing. The European imports / the exports to Europe have been slowing down, and we know that. We know that there is a major amount of economic drag that is being, you know, dealt out by the European area due to their austerity measures. It's a very simple equation, folks, right? You know, you don't need an analyst to tell you what this means. The bottom line is that they have to cut back on spending. They're doing so. They're implementing it radically. And what's happening is that it is slowing down the overall level of economic activity throughout the world, particularly when you look at where they get their most of their trade from, and that is Asia. So when we look at that and we see that that's happening, then we add to the fact that we get the announcement of by Greece this weekend that says that, you know what, you know, we're not taking another, a third major bailout off the table if the austerity measures don't really work. Well, I think that's kind of a hint, hint, wink, wink kind of comment that's telling us that basically, you know, they're saying they're setting us up for the fact that it's probably not going to work so well. Already we're seeing that Italian bonds have again started to slide higher or move higher. The yields are moving much higher, and their bonds are getting depressed because there is some thought that this situation in Europe is not over yet. It's a little bit more of a slower breakdown right now because of the amount of money they have as a backdrop, which, by the way, again, this weekend they came in and said that they'll do about, I think it was, I want to say it was 650 or 700 billion euros, I believe was the number. And that was short of some of the estimates and expectations of about a trillion round number. Why not make it a trillion round? Germany said, no way, they're not going to do it. This is just out of control. They're not going to commit that much to the firewall at this point. And then they pointed the finger at the IMF saying, hey, they have to raise up some of their numbers over there in order to help us out. So, you know, the saga continues with this whole situation with Europe. But I'll tell you what really hit the news that really was interesting to me was that one on the ECB, one of the heads, Juncker, J-U-N-K-E-R, Juncker, basically blew up and blew off a meeting that was going on in Brussels last week and said, you know what, this is ridiculous. You can't get anybody to make a decision. All there is babbling out there. He used the word babbling, that we just continue to get these you know, people coming onto the news and in the press conferences saying one thing, and then nobody's coming up with an actual plan. And he blew off the meeting, walked out, canceled the press conference, and said, you know what, we're not doing this. Interesting. I guess they're at their wit's end at this point of the rhetoric and the manipulation of the markets with their commentary, and they finally got to the point that they think they have to actually do something. Well, they did. They put up a lot of money. They did the LTROs and they did the firewall and blah, blah, blah. But I guess they're getting to a point that there's the disagreements and the inability to really get any kind of consensus, and probably due to the realization that some of the peripheral countries, the Portugals, Italy's, Greece, are in still significant significantly bad shape. And there's no real way out of this, even with austerity. All right, so we have that as a backdrop. I will tell you that I think that this quarter coming up, the next couple of months, are going to start highlighting that. You're going to start seeing a commentary pro and con the China situation. We did see that South Korea, their exports were down again. And Japan, we're seeing also their industrial orders were down. You're seeing some confidence better. You're definitely seeing some confidence better in some areas, although Germany dropped, I believe, last Friday. There was an unexpected drop. And, you know, but you're going to see that. European, I guess, you know, the overall confidence should be probably starting to wane a little bit from where it was after the implementation of the LTRO and the, you know, the plans to firewall it. But at the same time, you have to realize that at the end of the day, the austerity is not going to help. So we had Bernanke come on talk last week. Did you see this? This is great. He comes on and he starts talking about how, hey, you know what? Yep, we see the oil prices and the gasoline prices probably, you know, being a little bit higher than we wanted them to be at this point. And realize that it could be a drag on the economy, but we don't think that anything significant. You know, I find it amazing. It's just amazing. How is it that a 25% increase in gasoline prices, something that most Americans use at a very high level, extraordinary level of consumption, is not going to affect the economy? Isn't it a simple calculation of, hey, there's this much money to spend, there's this much money that has to go to gas, the rest of it can go to whatever. So in other words, when you have an increase in the gas prices, isn't that going to pull on something else? I would be very careful to watch the retail stocks these days. If you have austerity that's going on in Europe and you have a higher gas price around the world and in the U.S., you know, how long can the extraordinary level of the yen, which, by the way, dropped about 9% or 10% in the last month, how long can the yen and the extraordinary amount of growth of the billionaires and millionaires in China, how long could that really sustain the rest of the world's retail? Be very careful. Watch the retail stocks. That's going to be the tip-off. That's going to be the kind of tell of what's going on. It may continue and do well for a while, but I would just watch the high ends in particular. And clearly the mid-ranges as well. Dollar stores and the low-end ones, okay. But watch the high-end and mid-range to see if there's any kind of break. If there's a break in the high-end, that's going to be a tell about the Asian area that I believe in the emerging markets. Mid-range is going to be the U.S. and how the gas affected the prices, the gas prices affected the overall consumption here. So that's the kind of thing you want to write down and kind of take a look at. The other thing that I'll mention is when Bernanke came out and talked about last Monday how, you know what, we do think that there's going to be a little bit of a reversal. It kind of hinted at that. The employment situation is probably going to get a little worse before it gets better again. And he said that even if the economy gets better, the accommodative process that he has, that you know, the easy money, the stimulus, is going to even do much better to enhance the economy. So let me kind of take that back and kind of explain that. I think what he was saying was that no matter what, he believes that the Fed is going to keep an accommodative policy for an extended period of time. In other words, even if you see that the economy gets better, the Fed is not going to take their foot off the pedal. That's pretty amazing. Think about that. Isn't the whole job of the Fed to kickstart the economy, not basically manipulate, run, and puppeteer the entire economic process? I thought they were there for basically keeping things level and keeping things on an even plane and in the background. They seem to be so much in the foreground, not only here, but in the rest of the world. Central banks around the world have been incredibly active. And in a sense, they've been really the biggest part of the markets, whether it's the bond or the equity markets, moves over the last, and currency markets, by the way, their moves over the last year and a half. So as soon as Bernanke comes out and talks about that, of course, we have other Fed speakers like Fisher saying that the Fed is done. It's now up to Congress and yada, yada, blada, blada. So it's just all this talk back and forth, you know, kind of going either way, trying to, I guess, do what they can to balance the discussion. Now, consumers' confidence dipped slightly last week. Housing prices, did you see this? The Case-Shiller number was out, and it was at a 9-year low. The 20 housing index year-over-year level came out at a 9-year low. So I don't know. We've been talking all about the idea that there may be a bit of a housing, maybe not a recovery, but a stabilization. And then you see this come out, and I'm like, wow, ooh, what's going on? You know, we have all these plans in place. We have the lowest interest rates really in history. We have extended period on tap. We have mortgages really low. We have different plans and HAMPs and this and all these incentive plans going on. And we're at a 9-year low on housing. But yet The NAHB Builder Study is saying that confidence is really high at new home builders. I mean, it's kind of like madness. Don't we want to stop the building, the new housing from going up so that we can constrain the inventory and then bring up the housing value so that we can get the people that are underwater on their mortgages back to a level that they're able to breathe and therefore have a much more emboldened economy where people aren't strapped by not only not having a job, but also having houses underwater? Again, another head scratcher. You know, another one of those I don't understand. But yet, corporate America, we know this, and this is good. Corporate America has really done a great job at revitalizing their balance sheets and keeping expenses under wrap. Therefore, dropping it all down to the bottom line, that's why the overall level of earnings on the S&P has been good. Now, with that, I'll mention to you that there was a really, I think, a tremendously fascinating study done. Merrill Lynch put out a report that said that much of the beat from last quarter's S&P earnings were due to stronger than expected results from Apple. This is by an analyst. His name is Suzuki. If you exclude Apple, the S&P earnings would have missed estimates by 1.4%. Quarterly fourth quarter earnings growth of 13% would have been just 10% without Apple. How interesting is that? We know that Apple has been an economy of itself. But wow, we're talking about a tremendous amount of variation. So you would have missed overall. In other words, surprised to the downside if it wasn't for Apple. Now you may say, well, we had Apple in there. And of course, how do you look at it that way? But I think you need to take out some of the outliers in this and the players that are on either ends really and say, what is the health, the pulse of the earnings situation? And, you know, I think that we're seeing that we're at probably close to, or very close to, a peak of earnings for the S&P 500, including or excluding Apple. There's a lot of reasons for that. But the basic reason is that you could just go so long with a lean workforce, when now we see hiring coming back, which is going to have to cost a bit. Revenues have been kind of flat, a little bit up, but still flat. And then, you know, the dollar has been increasing recently, comparatively, over the last quarter or two quarters. And that obviously hurts a little bit of the earnings as well. There's been a lot of benefit, headwinds, or I should say tailwinds, forgive me, tailwinds when it comes to earnings due to the lower interest rates, dollar being down, and not having to have, you know, an increase in employees. All that comes into play here and looks at, when you look at the earnings situation, really is the good thing. Now, I'm not being negative here. I'm really not. I think it's great. It was a great quarter. You know, the S&P did fantastic. Stocks individually, there were some amazing breakouts through the quarter, just some real great numbers that all started January 1st, like we've talked about. And I got to tell you something, very, very impressive. But remember, first of all, trees don't grow to the sky, number one, and that's what we have to talk about when we talk about earnings. And at the same time, we do notice that the Economic Surprise Index, which is the level of surprises compared to analyst expectations, has been rolling over. We did a post on this last week, and we looked at it, and you can see the chart. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a chart there that shows the correlation and relationship of the S&P 500 to the Economic Surprise Index. Now, we're not talking about things have to get a lot worse here, but you have to look at the relationship between expectations and actual numbers that came in. And when you look at the two, look how there was a vertical move on the surprise index that corresponded to the move of the S&P 500, and now that's rolling down. And that's through February, the one that we put up there. If you look at the one that's going to come out from March, you're going to see it even worse rolling down for the ESI, Economic Surprise Index, put out by Citigroup. That's important to look at, because if a lot of the time you see that, wow, economic surprise have been to the positive, and markets then catch up and get surprised and move, you know, what happens now? Well, now we're started holding on to, if you notice, over the last week or two, we're seeing a little bit of a change in the complexity and the composition of what is leading, what isn't, and the color of the market has changed dramatically. We're seeing that look at the McClellan oscillator, for example, And you look at what's going on there. I read his piece this weekend and clearly shows that, you know, you're starting to trend lower. The oscillator is moving to a negative territory. And you're also seeing a variety of his other indicators showing that, you know, you're seeing a lot more trading lower versus trading higher, you know, the relationship there. So when we have a very bullish atmosphere where we saw that hedge funds in the last week or so got more bullish than ever. And by the way, wrote about this also last week, look at the relationship of when hedge funds move one way or the other. It is bizarre. You think this is the smart money? They've turned into the dumb money. Amazing how far behind they have become. They get bullish on oil and then oil drops. They get bullish on cotton and cotton drops. They get bearish on wheat and wheat goes up. They're bearish on the markets and the markets are up. Now they're bullish on the markets. So one of the highest levels of bullishness they've been in a while. And amazing. What's going to happen now? The market's starting to roll over a little bit. Doesn't mean it's going to crash. I'm not saying that. But it's starting to kind of slow down, get a little bit more of a straight line. So I wrote an article called "This Is What Makes Me Nervous." Look at that. It's on thedisciplinedinvestor.com as well. All right, let's get to our guest and talk a little bit about kind of what this whole abnormal returns is all about and, you know, kind of go there. Before we do so, let me just mention that obviously you know this. This podcast, this episode is sponsored by our good friends over at Citrix for GoToMeeting. And I think, you know, what's cool is that when you have technology these days, it creates such it's such a time saver. Seriously, you know, think about all the things you could do. Probably on one hand, time saver, on the other time, time waster. But there's so many things that you could do to make yourself so much more efficient. You know, stop the traveling maybe, or just multitask. GoToMeeting is one of those things that helps you, helps me, you know, really get a just an amazing amount of things put together and then showcase them, let's say, or even communicate them with people in a really efficient manner. Now, with GoToMeeting by Citrix, they have this new thing, this whole, I think I mentioned this is really cool, this HD Faces. All you need is a webcam, and you can click to instantly collaborate with your team or clients in real time from anywhere in the world, whether it's a laptop or whether it's a desktop or a PC or a Mac, whatever it is. You help build trust, confidence, and make meetings much more effective. You can very easily get it for yourself, free as a matter of fact. What's really neat is that you can get a 30-day free trial. That's right, 30-day totally free trial of GoToMeeting with HD Faces. All you have to do is go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST, and you'll get a free 30 days of GoToMeeting. You'll really like that service, and I really think that you, and I encourage you, and I've encouraged you for a long time to check it out. I think it's really great. We're going to get to our guest. When I get back, I want to give you also another side note special offer and talk to you a little bit about Trigger Points research because the alerts went live. We have a little bit of stats for you. I know a lot of people have asked about that, plus a special opportunity because the trials are kind of the 14-day free trial and all that is ended. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have been on there checking it out, got some great responses on that. But let's get to our guest right now and see what he has to say. At the request of a great friend of mine, Brian Shannon, this is somebody we're having as a guest today. His name is Tadas Viscanta. He is the author of a new book coming out called Abnormal Returns and the website Abnormal Returns. And I thought we'd spend some time with him and find out a little bit more about what's going on and what he has to say. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. Listen, you know, the site Abnormal Returns, the name Abnormal Returns, you want to fill us in a little bit about how you came up with that and what it all means?
You know what? It's funny because when I was looking to start a blog, I went through a financial glossary looking for terms that would be good URLs for a blog, and Abnormal Returns was one of them. And at the time, I didn't really think about the alphabetical aspect of it. So starting with an A and a B turned out to be somewhat of a benefit over time. So I was probably pretty naive at that point, but the name has stuck and it's worked out pretty well for me. So,
okay, great. So one of the things that I see is that you're in a 6-year anniversary. A lot of people are at 6 years these days. You know, you have a little bit of it's a kind of a negative slant on some things. You're a bit edgy and all that. And I was just kind of curious what your overall take on things is and what your writing style is all about. And tell me a little bit more about, you know, kind of what your thinking is these days.
Well, you know, when you blog twice a day for, you know, for going on 6 years, you do have to keep it interesting, not only for yourself, but the readers. So there's certainly, you know, I try to be pretty neutral by and large. I try to reflect kind of what's going on in the blogosphere and in the mainstream media. But, you know, certainly your opinion does bleed through from time to time. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, I agree. So these days we have the Fed and the governments all over the place. What, I mean, is this going to be forever? Is this going to be somewhat, you know, contained? Or where are we going from here with all this involvement?
You know, it's a really interesting challenge because, you know, these are really unprecedented times. And, you know, I finished my book at the end of last year, and it's coming out in a couple of weeks. And I have a couple of sections there about the Fed, talking about, you know, how it is that investors should deal with the Fed. And, you know, for better or worse, I had to fill it with caveats talking about how, you know, these are really unprecedented times, and the Fed has intervened in the economy in ways that, you know, were really unthought of just a couple of years ago. And it really is working out from an investor perspective, and that's really the perspective that I have from writing the blog, and that's kind of my viewpoint for the readership is really as an investor. And in the book, I really talk about it as a war on savers. I mean, the Fed is really pushing investors out of cash equivalents, 0%, and that's been, you know, that's been the case for a couple of years now, and forcing them into riskier assets in search of yield in really any form or fashion. That's why we've seen things like high yield take off. We've seen this growing interest in dividend stocks and really dividends in any sort of form or fashion, whether it be MLPs, you know, really anything where you can get yield. And that has really how the way the Fed has affected the investor class, really forcing people to get out of cash and look for returns in any sort of form or fashion. And the challenge is that some of these investors, unfortunately, probably don't realize the risks that they're taking by investing in these different sorts of asset classes.
But at the same time, you have all these investors that have or savers and income requirements of people who are elderly, frankly. And what happens is that now all of a sudden these people didn't realize the risk they had either by keeping their money in savings accounts. Because when they have the money in savings accounts, right, they expected to get a certain amount of income and they expected to have a certain amount of expenses. And then all of a sudden the Fed is pushing things so far down and keeping such a tight rein on bonds and the interest rates that now all of a sudden we have a situation where these people can no longer make the money they need to live on. So they're stuck, and they didn't expect to have this kind of a situation where they were actually going to be underwater because they were in the safest of all investments. And this is kind of something that has really been a problem, and it does, in fact, affect the economy. I mean, it's definitely something's not working right now.
Right, absolutely. No, that's an ongoing challenge, and I think there's kind of two sides of the coin. You know, one of which is that, you know, there are no guarantees, you know, for better or worse, there really are no guarantees. You know, we talk about, you know, people have lived for a long time and have planned for having some return on their cash, you know, their cash equivalents. You know, they're not expecting to get 0%, but they were expecting to get some return on their cash investments. And one of the lines that I use is that, you know, cash is an asset, but it's not an investment. And what I mean by that is cash is certainly an asset. I mean, we all recognize that having cash is a good thing. And, you know, it gives you the opportunity to invest, you know, it gives you the flexibility to invest in other classes, asset classes as markets kind of move, but it's really not an investment. You know, any sort of historical look at the return on cash, once you take into account inflation and taxes, you know, you're looking at negative real returns. So you really can't, investors and savers really can't expect to get any sort of kind of real return over time on cash. And this is obviously an extraordinary situation where the Fed is, you know, being so hardcore in terms of their pushing down on short-term yields and frankly the whole yield curve for that matter. But, you know, that's kind of the distinction that you kind of have to make.
So you're a blogger. Now, a lot of the media is all about kind of looking for the silver lining. And what you find is a lot of times that when you read the differential between what's in the mainstream media and then also in the world of blogging, if you will, a lot of times bloggers are very kind of negative and edgy, and they have a lot of I don't know, just a different side of things. And what you're really reading is kind of a two-pronged outlook when you read the both, right?
Sure. No, negativity sells, that's for sure.
Right. So tell me, in terms of the overall environment right now, the economy right now, the world right now, with all the things that are going on, you know, where is the silver lining? Where do we find the things that are beneficial, that are looking better, that really will make an impact moving on into the future that will, you know, we could really hang our hats on? I mean, what do you have to say?
Well, I mean, I think you have to look at the economy. And I think, you know, obviously there are all sorts of cross currents and people talk about weather effects, but it seems like the economy is getting better. You know, today, you know, over the last few weeks, we've continued to see initial unemployment claims continue to trend lower and lower. Obviously, there's a lot of noise in those figures and there's revisions and all of that. And, you know, that always leaves open the possibility for people to kind of pick at the data. But, you know, I think the most important variable that people look at, employment, seems to be getting better. Is it kind of, you know, it's certainly coming from levels that, you know, nobody wants, you know, they call it the great, we, you know, people are calling it the Great Recession for a reason. You know, unemployment in all its forms, you know, whether it be, you know, people who have, you know, the duration of unemployment that people have faced, and people having to go, you know, into part-time work as opposed to full-time work. All of these things, you know, these kind of, those variables are really at levels not seen for decades. So we're obviously coming off of in that regard a very low base. But in that regard, things seem to be getting better. And you know, is it going to take a while for those numbers to continue to get better and get back to levels that we saw, you know, back early, you know, in the early part of the last decade? Yeah, I think so. Is it getting better fast enough for the Obama administration? Probably not. They would obviously like to see those numbers continue to get better and better on a continual basis. But I think that's one number that we can all point to and say, look, it's getting better. And, you know, obviously, and for everybody's sake, we hope to see those numbers continue to get better.
But now, you know, I've said this many times before, and I look around and I see all this robotics and all this technology and all this re-engineering and the productivity happening to rise very nicely. And in the age that we are in now, I just don't see us going back to, let's say, 2005, 2006 levels of unemployment where it was at 4 and 5%, let's say. It's just almost impossible because the world has changed. There's no need for us to have a file clerk, a traditional person who is going to be the quote-unquote copy boy, or, you know, there's a lot of areas in the economy that no longer exist in terms of jobs. So, you know, what's going to happen moving further when it comes to that, and what's the outlook?
No, that's right. I think that's absolutely true, and I think that's one of the challenges that analysts have in, you know, any analyst has in trying to distinguish between what is kind of a cyclical phenomenon or what's kind of a secular phenomenon. And we don't, you know, it's not written down somewhere, oh, this is cyclical and this is secular. It's all kind of mixed together, and we just have to kind of tease out those effects. You know, in the last week, Amazon paid, I think, $700 some million for a robot company, and those robots are picking stuff off of shelves in all of their massive warehouses. And those were jobs that were previously held by human beings. And obviously, is it great for the robot makers? Yeah, I mean, there are going to be people who are going to be making more robots. But, you know, like you say, net-net, you know, the people who, there's probably more jobs lost in the warehouse than there are in that robot factory.
Yeah, I mean, I've had arguments with people back and forth about this. I've talked about this about a year ago. I wrote a piece on this, and I talked about how the robotics are really helping productivity. It's a good thing. But at the same time, they're not going to really do anything for our they'll help productivity, they'll help earnings, they'll help the economy, but not help the employment situation. But that's something that I wrote, and I got a lot of feedback saying you're out of your mind, you're crazy, and I'm not sure, you know, maybe it was the unions that wrote me or something, I don't know. Anyway, your book is called Abnormal Returns, and I kind of wanted to get a little bit more insight into what you're talking about, why you wrote it, a little bit about the book, and maybe you can give us a little bit of a quick summary of what the genesis was behind that and what's going on and kind of what you want the readers to take out of the experience of reading this book. It has a pretty long subtitle too, right?
Well, you know, I'll say the subtitle just because it helps explain a little bit what was going on. It's called Abnormal Returns, Winning Strategies from the Front Lines of the Investment Blogosphere. And I had been approached by a few people to write a book And obviously because of my work on the blog and in the blogosphere, and that's really kind of the genesis of the book. And it's really, there's really no grand overarching theme, but what I did is I kind of wrote down a bunch of things that I've kind of learned over the last couple of years, and some of the lessons that have kind of coalesced in my brain, and kind of organized those along a number of different lines, and talking about not only talking about things as basic as risk and return, but also talking about some of the things that have really changed over the past few years for investors. Things like the rise of ETFs, the rise of kind of the global economy and global investing, and things like that. So it was really a means for me to kind of maybe expound on in a little bit longer form than I do on the blog on a series of topics. And I hope that I'm able to kind of tie all those things together into a little bit of a cohesive narrative.
Yeah. So, I mean, the outcome of this, again, and of some of these other things may take a long time to really play out, it seems. Where's the best place that we can be looking at to invest these days? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think, as we were talking about earlier, the healthcare debate is one that really, it's challenged because it affects everybody. They're talking about in the Supreme Court arguments this week. The healthcare debate is one that affects everybody, and the fact is that all of these the strands of the healthcare debate are all intertwined. There's these secular effects, there's these cyclical effects, there's the public and private sort of camps that all get intertwined. And anybody like you, who's essentially a small business owner, has to deal with these. Deal with these issues on a continual basis, and it's a challenge for it's a challenge that everybody sort of faces. And I think I don't know how much the uncertainty about it really affects the economy, but it is one that it does affect everybody in a very real sense.
We've been talking with Tadas Viskanta from Abnormal Returns. Get the book over to Amazon, pre-order it; it's available. Hey, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate your insight, and great luck on the book. And again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, good stuff there. And I do encourage you to check out his stuff. Try to bring on guests. By the way, if you have any guests or people that you think would be a good guest, I would love to hear about it. Because we do our best to, if you notice, we have some repeat guests. We have Frank Curzio. We have Barry Ritholtz. We have... Who do we have on a lot? We have Fausto Puglisi, Tom McClellan, John Dvorak. Every once in a while comes on, but I do a show of him, of course, on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, if you will. John Markman, another John Najarian. All these different people come on, but we really try to have new guests, new life, new blood, new commentary. See what's going on out there. If you have somebody that is a professional, that is, someone who you think can really bring something to the audience, something to our listeners, something different, maybe bring something to me that I haven't heard about, that'd be awesome. There's plenty out there. I got to tell you that I don't know. You know what? Do me a favor. Send me a note, really, and just put down their information, how I can contact them, a little bit about why it's good. We'll check them out. Send it over to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Okay? Do me that favor. I'd really appreciate that, and we can figure out maybe there's somebody that we can bring on, because what are we doing? 257 shows. What does that mean? We've done 257 episodes. If you figure about that's about 5 years worth of content, the amount of hours we spent together. Hopefully, a lot of you have been with us a long time, and for those of you that are new, welcome, by the way. Probably should have said that at the beginning of the show, but you know what? There's lots out there that we could probably learn from, and that's what the whole idea of this is about. It's not only about investing ideas, and it's not only about getting some of the latest news that's going on, but it's also about learning what's going on so that we can be better investors, more disciplined, more, on it, so that we could take the emotion a little bit out of it and put in the all the tools that are out there to make sure that we are using them to our best ability and to be as profitable as possible, right? Isn't that the whole point? But it's a learning process, and that learning process never ends. That learning process is ongoing for years and years and years. I try to condense it down so you can put in an hour a week and you can understand what's going on with what around the world into the highlights, the most important, some ideas, and there we go from there and figure out what's going on in terms of markets and how to benefit. All right, I mentioned before that there is a couple things I wanted to touch on. Let me just make sure I got this here. There was an email that came in to me that I thought was really interesting. This is an email from Anthony. And Anthony wrote me, and he said that in our podcast, I often say that it doesn't matter why a market is going up. It doesn't matter if it's on low volume, but let me make this analogy. This is from Anthony. He says, say you're an owner of the Florida Marlins, and you're considering buying Barry Bonds. It's kind of funny. We could buy Barry stocks or Barry Bonds, I guess. But you discovered that he has been under stimulus and steroids for the last 7 years of his career and will have to stop because of new testing. Would you bet your money on him, even though his performance was artificially enhanced? I feel the same way about the stock market because once the stimulus is gone, how do we know it's not going to lose the strength and drop back to new lows if and when the market realized that the debt isn't going anywhere? It was simply transferred to the taxpayers. I'd love to hear your address. You address this issue. Thanks. All right, Anthony, here's the deal. This is what I think, at least. I agree with you. But at the same time, is the stock market going to move directly up or directly down because of the stimulus? And by the way, do you think they'll just pull the stimulus and the steroids? No. They will do what they can to keep things afloat, at least for a certain period of time, because it's all in their benefit. You know, that's the joke of this all. The fact of the matter is the government right now, and not only our government, but the governments around the world are in a save our ass situation. They want to make sure that what happened in 2007, 8, 9 doesn't repeat itself. And what they're going to do right now is do everything they can in their power to print money, to create the either the illusion or the reality that things are getting better, whatever you want to say there. But at the same time, if you can close your eyes and kind of take yourself away from the news just for a second, all the things that have gone on, and realize that companies, company by company, can be resilient. That you realize that the market is a market of stocks, but each individual stock may hold its own benefit. For example, you know, you take away the stimulus, and okay, markets don't do well. But does that mean immediately that everything's going to drop off a cliff? No. That also means, by the way, that there are some companies that will still benefit. Maybe you shift your asset allocation. Maybe you don't have it all in. Maybe you hedge a little bit. Maybe what you do is you have those companies like a Chipotle, or you know, maybe some of the retail stocks that are very resilient. Or maybe you look at, you know, at the time that things change, patterns change, trends change, then you take your money out of the stock market. You don't have to necessarily be in the quote-unquote stock market. You could be in a company as Apple, that may be resilient after stimulus is gone, at least for some time. And if it starts backing off, you could say, you know what, I bought Apple at X price. I'm willing to take it down to this price. That's it. I'm moving on. But at the same time, you cannot make this giant analogy that just because I believe something is the case, it's going to be. Your analogy, your discussion here about Barry Bonds is very good. But you know what? All the people that would have bet on him throughout the years when he was on the steroids would have done very well. Once you find out that they was doing something to artificially enhance it and that that's no longer going to be allowed, okay, stop betting on him. But only until he's pulled. The speculation of him being pulled, okay, maybe an opportunity to buy, as crazy as that sounds. Because people get panicked. People get out early, and then it moves back up. All the people that want to get back in because they missed it. When Barry Bonds no longer is playing or steroids are totally outlawed and you find out that he could no longer play, then maybe it's a time to reassess. But until then, why would we go out and just absolutely say, you know what? I bet this. Work the trend. When the trend changes, you change. But to go out so far into the future and speculate is not a good idea. I can tell you that I was jumping up and down all over the place in 2006, 2007 about the housing crash that was about to happen. And you know what? It took a year and I looked like an idiot for a year. Now, if I was to bet on the housing market going down in the beginning when I believed it was going to happen, I would have been wrong and woefully wrong for a year. Lost a ton of money. Now, fortunately, I didn't take that bet because I wanted to wait till things got turned around a bit. You want to wait till you see the action change. That's when you want to hit it. So I hope that answers your question, Anthony. Probably, you know, you sound like you're pretty dug in on this idea, but I got to tell you something. You'd really enhance your returns and your opportunity, I think, if you were to follow the trend. It's very hard to do, by the way. A lot of news out there, a lot of things hitting the tape, a lot of things that are moving things around. You know, sometimes you need to step back, and that's for the professional, the retail, the novice. That's for everybody. Step back and see what's going on and just say, okay, let me be objective here and not get clouded by all the different things that are out there that may happen. That may be. And by the way, also recognize that nothing is absolutely permanent when it comes to markets. Things change. Now, in closing, I just want to mention a couple of things. I mentioned at the beginning that a lot of people have taken the opportunity for the 14-day free trial, which has ended. We may do something in the future, but I don't think so for a little while. We have so much interest in this. And if you have not had the opportunity and you're looking for some ideas when it comes to trading, we give very specific, timely, we'll call them calls. So for example, last week we had, you know, about four or five different stocks that came in. So you don't get these all day long. You don't get, 10 a day. Maybe you get one a day, two a day, both short and long, depending on what subscription you pick up. And I got to tell you something, it's not that expensive considering the opportunity you have and so far how things have been working out. We have about a 65 to 70% accuracy ratio within about a 1 week time. These are alerts that are based on, we'll say, a 1 day to a 1 month trading horizon. So if you're looking for an opportunity where you're going to get an instant text message or an email that says, hey, look, this stock is setting up like this. We see a breakout opportunity up to this point. Here's the trading range. You need to buy it and sell it or stop out of it. And it's easy as pretty much 1, 2, 3. You pretty much just, you know, go to your brokerage account and either do it online or however you go about doing it. And you implement and follow the bouncing ball. Just follow the bouncing ball. Basically, we set it up to be somewhat easy, we'll say that, somewhat understandable, because it's just a very simple explanation with some charts that says, hey, look at this chart, look at where the range is, this is how we see it, and we give you, you know, all the things you need to do. Now, not every one of them is successful, but we give you the outs, but we give you the opportunity as well here. So if you haven't had the chance to do so, go over to triggerpointresearch.com. There's a lot more different reports and alerts that are coming out soon. We're going to have some sector rotation models. And this is all because that you have commented over the years that, you know what, you like the service that we provide, which is the management of portfolios through the TDIMG, Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where we do the trading for you. But you know what, you'd like to also be in the loop and have the opportunity to do some trading for yourselves, whether it's because you like it or whether it's because it's something that interests you or whether you have to be in control, whatever the reason is, I would really encourage you to go over to triggerpointresearch.com. It's inexpensive. It's a monthly subscription. And again, you know, think about if you're in this to make money or at least to be in the game, let's put it that way, that this is probably one of those things that you want to, you know, pick up on. And you can see the history of the various alerts, at least some of them. Most of them are blocked for, you see some of it, but obviously for the members that are on there. But you can see some of the things that we've done. And we put up a bi-weekly update, which we're going to have out on, I guess, Monday, which is a summary of the different things that happened, an overview of the things that worked and didn't work, et cetera. So you can see that. That will probably be up over at Trigger Point Research, and I'll try to put up also a link in this podcast in the show notes as well. Okay, triggerpointresearch.com. Let's see. What else do we have to talk about here? Oil prices, we talked about natural gas prices at a 10-year low, ridiculous, but some of the companies that have been in that business have still been doing very well. We've talked about them at length. We had that whole show with Frank Curzio about that as well, and I thought that was really kind of interesting. And if you picked up on any of those positions, those names, that was really quite amazing. The run we saw with some of those, the parts manufacturers, there's a company called Packer, there's Westport Innovations, there's Clean Energy Fuels, there's five or six different companies that are really in the market to really expand on this. And as we saw the new rule come in just last week, where the EPA is going to stop any new coal plants that are not going to be meet the criteria for their clean air, you know, obviously natural gas is so low, it makes a lot of sense for them to be building natural gas energy facilities. And obviously that's going to be going on quite extensively. So the government is obviously pushing what they can for the natural gas because we have what seems to be an unlimited supply. And I got to tell you something that, you know, I'm talking a little bit longer out here, and I don't usually kind of give you these kind of long out, long-term looks at things. I'm pretty bullish when it comes to that. I think there's a great opportunity. And let me just segue over for a second and talk to you about a couple of different things. I want to talk to you about options for a second here. And one of the things we did with our portfolios in terms of we have a high beta bullish stance, but yet we put on some positions last week to hedge out a little bit some of the risk. We put on a S&P 500 put, and we've been working a VIX option. Now, the VIX option that we picked up was maybe a week and a half ago. And the VIX has been moving around pretty wildly during the day and then settling back to kind of break even by the end. But that VIX option we have, which is the 19 strike for April, we picked it up initially at 80 cents, sold a bunch of it at $1.65 only 5 or 6 days later, sold most of it down and then bought it back at about a buck and change. And we think that the VIX is going to continue to have some volatility here. And as such, maybe you want to look at that as opposed to maybe looking at some of these ETFs that have been, well, horribly uncorrelated to markets. As a matter of fact, there's a right now we talked about TVIX, the TVIX, which is the 2x leverage that imploded because of the fact that they weren't issuing and creating new shares, and they did, and all the premium that was in there. We put up a list on thedisciplinedinvestor.com of all the ETFs that have the highest level of premium over price and the largest discount to price. We put that up last week. You know, if you have the chance, just go over to Discipline Investor and kind of thumb through all the pages of the historical articles. You get a lot of insight there, because what I do is I put a lot of my research up there, because that's how I do things. I write. That's how I think. When I'm thinking, I'm writing. And what I do is, that's why we created the site a number of years ago, was that I can kind of flush out the commentary that I have and look at the analysis, and then why not just put it out there for you? Because, you know, why not? It just gives you a little bit of an upper hand, hopefully. And if, you know, we're right, that's good. If it's not, well, we're going to hopefully correct that. Anyway, check that out. See what's going on with the premiums there. But also look at some options opportunities. If you haven't done so, there's some really good places like Options Monster that teaches, and a variety of other places that you can learn more about it. Do not get involved in options just if you don't know what's going on. There's a lot going on in how options are created, the pricing mechanisms behind them, what is the drivers of the prices, and you need to be very careful because you can get whipped around pretty well. There's a chapter in my book, The Disciplined Investor, that has a whole thing on options. I don't know if you picked one up, but it's over at Amazon, and you can get a copy there. Also available on Kindle. So that's available everywhere, I guess. All right, until next week, I want to wish you all a very happy and a healthy, and the Passover is starting actually next week, which I have a whole bunch of family coming down, which is going to be exciting, and I have some really interesting meetings happening this week. I'll tell you about that next week with some people from Bloomberg and some people when it comes to some technology. We'll bring all that up, and some new guests, some new commentary, and again, send me all your questions that you have at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me. Have a profitable week, and don't forget, Friday is the NFP payrolls number. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out what the unemployment rate is, and if, in fact, Bernanke tipped his hand when it came to the employment situation by saying, you know, that he thinks that there is the potential for, you know, a change in the employment situation. We'll start looking at that on Wednesday. We'll have the analysis on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll have the pre-analysis that we do every single month on Thursday about what to look for when it comes to the NFP number, the unemployment rate, as well as the employment number of hirings and firings. I'll see you soon. Thanks for joining me on this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.